which I'll now answer. Well, I was just asked to repeat something that I said last night in the presence of one devotee. He asked me to repeat it. Or he asked me to say it again. I said, all right, well, let's say it in the public assembly so that all can hear that. One devotee said to me that someone wants to give me a donation. Is the echo on?
No, but
there's an automatic echo from the walls, is it? The acoustics, yeah. If you ever build a temple or anything again in future, I don't know anything about construction, but if you can, try to bear the acoustics in mind. It's actually very important for devotees.
Wood paneling.
Wood paneling. Here's a man who's built facilities before. Stone gives a lot of echo. The acoustics is very important. I remember in ISKCON, Calcutta, we used to have such fantastic kirtans. One reason was the acoustics. That's one reason. I mean, the kirtaniers were also, you know, we were all fine. Every night we had such tremendous kirtans. Because one reason, we didn't use mics in kirtans in those days, actually. We're just the devotees who were singing, leading the kirtan, they had to have a strong voice. But if the acoustics can, you can lose the whole, you can have a strong voice and it can be lost, or you can have a weak voice and it becomes magnified. In our Mehrabad temple, we have such a big, beautiful temple, but you can hardly give a class there because the acoustics are so bad. So anyway, that wasn't the point. It was mentioned to me about someone wants to give a donation. And I said, that's what we would normally say in English, to give a donation. The Sanskrit term for offering something to a guru or a brahmana or superior is dakshina, which it doesn't, there's a difference in mentality between giving a donation and what we can say in English, making an offering. If one says, I'm giving a donation, there's the idea that I'm in a superior position and I'm benefiting the person I'm giving to is in need of something which I have and he doesn't. So therefore I am benefiting him. But the idea with giving dakshina is that I am making an offering. This person doesn't actually need anything from me, but I am making an offering to purify myself. And if he's kind enough, he'll accept it to purify me. It's a completely different concept. So you may say in English, I'm giving a donation, but if you can say making an offering, or I'm offering, please accept. There's a difference. And then we're discussing a little bit about language and what was I saying about, yeah, how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very specific about defining terms. Just like we ask people, do you believe in God? And they may say yes, but they're actually atheists, because their concept of God is so far off from who he actually is. They don't believe in... Or just like some people say to me, I'm an atheist, and they say, well, which God don't you believe in? I probably agree with you. The God you don't believe in, I also don't believe in. So it's actually very important to be very careful in what we say. There's a lot of talk these days about how you say things, but it's actually more important what you say than how you say it. And the language and culture and our thought processes are intimately linked. There's a whole branch of philosophy and linguistics. We think in terms of language, and actually that's why these Western languages are actually they're not adequate for describing Krishna. Srila Prabhupada has kindly purified the English language. It's amazing how Srila Prabhupada is able to communicate the truths of Krishna consciousness in a language which is totally inadequate for that. Of course, any language is inadequate, but specifically the English language, which has been developed on the platform of ignorance and of gross sense gratification and of cheating, misguided religion. So all those concepts are embedded in, just like we say God, and when we say God, people have whatever idea. When we say God, the people have the idea that they've all the various bogus ideas they've picked up to date, and they think that's God. So it's actually a whole total re-education process. You won't find that Srila Prabhupada often said God. He would say long supreme personality of Godhead. Why did he use this long term? Why didn't he just say God? Because God, everything bogus in the universe passes under the term God. And everyone bogus in the universe passes under the term God. So that's an important. There are some, actually in traditional Vaishnav manner of speaking, it sounds very elaborate. You'll find this in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's not written. Madhavendra Puri was sick. It was saying he was enacting the pastime of appearing to be sick, because it's not considered that. If you say he's sick, well, it sounds like he's just another conditioned soul under the modes of material nature. But it should be understood that he is enacted. This is the Vaishnava understanding, which people may be skeptical about, but actually the pure devotees, they are Mahatmana Stumang Partha Daiving Prakritim Ashritaha. They're under the direction of the spiritual energy. So they may appear to be sick, but that's a pastime that they enact. It should be understood like this, to give an opportunity to their disciples to serve them and to demonstrate how to execute to conditioned souls like ourselves, how to remain Krishna conscious in that difficult circumstance. So, more questions. I like better than magic boxes that we do it in order. That's my personal preference. So, but what happens is the new questions get plopped on top of the older ones. Okay. Oh, you can choose if you want. You want to have a look through and choose your question? There are more here. Okay.
This is for some.
It's some technical details.
Is there names on it?
Like no, there are no names.
They are with names on it. Maybe some they should of them go first.
You want to have the ones with names. You like the bold ones.
No, if it's personal with names on it, then
you prefer that, huh? Yeah.
Maybe they should go first. I don't know.
There aren't any with names. There aren't any on names on. But there are no like super controversial questions either. So. Nothing interesting.
This is like with a hand grenade, you know.
Yeah, it's like some terror. You don't know who threw it. Just thrown at you. So anyway,
all what was there in the box?
Yeah, but there are more with Avanath Prabhu. Okay. Quite a few. So, what do you want to do? It's up to you. Okay.
Why? But I'm not starting you.
Okay, it's a technical one. I'll answer. In Prabhupada's time, also was the temple room dark during Mangal Arati? Yes, at least all the temples I was in. Is there any reference in Shastra regarding this? Probably there is, because Traditionally, there were not electric lights. Yeah, you want to read? Was the temple room dark during Mangalarti with only the deities lit and the devotees in the dark when Prabhupada was present? And the answer is, in my experience, yes, and Manidhar Prabhu corroborates that. Is there any reference in Shastra? I don't know any specific reference. It's a very, you know, it's a, one of those very detailed things. But I would think so, probably, that previously there were not electric lights, and to light the temple means you light so many little deepams. And the time for lighting them, I've been in many temples, non-ISKCON temples, early in the morning also, and in the South Indian temples, there are no windows or anything, and you need a light to even get into them. You can't see where you're going without any. So they have a light. And Mangalarti, they don't have it exactly the same way that we do. Actually, in South India, all the Aartis are called Mangalarti. That's just a detail. Mangal Harati, as they say. But the lighting time, usually that will be in the evening. So it's a common thing. Normally there's not light. Well, actually, in the time when Mangalarti is supposed to be held, there's no natural light. So yeah, the deities are there. The deities are lit and the rest of the temple is lit. That's cultural one. And I think there's another cultural one. Yeah, anyway, you can learn.
This is technical.
They're not technical, yeah.
This is in Croatian, I don't.
Yeah. It's another technical one. One thing, I've been discussing so many things with so many devotees today, and there are many, you know, there's so many of these devotees, they have many, many concerns. You're supposed to be translating, or you're trying to translate that in your mind, and you don't have a two-track mind, like most of us. We don't have... Well, you're already on two tracks with two languages, and I guess it gets a little difficult when you're asked to go on three or more. Anyway, I was discussing so many things with so many devotees. We find that devotees, many have practical concerns with, you know, very down-to-earth kind of things. I was thinking, you know, we should have seminars on all these things, and you know, maybe the seminar I'm giving is like some kind of high philosophy and all this kind of thing. But I'll stick with the high philosophy seminar because, you know, Krishna consciousness is not all about cleaning up the garbage in our hearts and adjusting our social situation. And although these things are essential and required, but ultimately we have to think of Krishna. And if we're all the time concerned with just the techniques, and we don't think of Krishna, then it's Shama Eva Hi Kevalam. So I'll stick with my seminar of discussing the Bhagavata of Bhagavan. What makes him Bhagavan? What makes him God? How is he God? And these other things, there should be seminars. There should be books guiding grihasthas and so many things. There are still many things needed in our movement. Okay, please read this. This is the real magic box. You know what's coming. This is for you.
Maharaj places her in humble obeisance to the glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Yuga Dharma. Why is this movement of Krishna consciousness spreading so slowly?
That's for you. It's a great one for you. There's not enough books distributed. I can tell you the answer right now.
And how much are we truly bona fide, taking in consideration that we were given the highest knowledge? Doesn't that mean that we are not convincing enough, or that we have a poor media engagement, and other low-class materialists are attracting more and more conditioned souls and dragging them away from Sri Krishna?
Okay, it's for you. Well, it's addressed to me, but you can answer.
I'm just reading Krishna.
Okay.
Чека се во епоха сесности Кришна во тоа споро шири, за колико сме достигнали во достојни со обзир на нами дадено најзвишено знање, не значи да тоа не сме доволно вредливи, тоа да сме тоа е да сме слабо мизиски ангажирани, а други ниско класни материјали се привлачат се више витални душа од влачачи и од Кришна.
Let's take a seat.
So
it's over to you.
Because this whole formulation, there is already, I think, at least three questions and two answers already given there. But okay, let's go one point after another. Why so slowly?
Why is this movement spreading so slowly? How much are we really bona fide being given the ultimate knowledge? Doesn't it mean that we are not convincing enough, or we are not, or that we have a...
Yeah.
Okay, a question by Marani Kutadas. Recently we had a controversy in ISKCON about whether or not to put footnotes in Srila Prabhupada's books. Based on my own understanding of Guru Sadhu Shastra, I have publicly taken a stance on this question without directly asking my Diksha Guru. What does he think about that? Does a person take a different stance from about these issues from his Diksha Guru? What if his Diksha Guru thinks that footnotes are okay and his disciple thinks that they are not? Nedavno smo imali kontroverzu u Iskonu umetati ili ne umetati footnote u Šlopravpadoj knjige. Na temelju vlastita razumijevanja Guru Sadhu Shastra javno zauzeo stav i bez da sam direktno pitao svog Guru što on misli o tome. Smije li osoba zauzeti drugačiji stav o takvim stvarima od svog Diksha Guru? Šta ako Diksha Guru smatra da je footnote ok, a ja mislim da nije?
Very delicate question with many many layers of various considerations, yeah, various nuances. The first point is that in actual Vaishnav culture, there's no internet battles. Things are not settled by vox populi. Those who are acharyas, if there's a disagreement between them, they will discuss and come up with a conclusion. And there are rules of debate by which it can be understood who is correct. There was a Madhva Sampradaya and a Shankara Sampradaya, one of the famous Madhva Acharya. One of the famous Acharyas in the Madhva line, he had a debate with one of the Shankara Acharyas, and the Madhyasta, or the mediator, or the go-between, was Vedanta Deshika of the Ramanuja Sampradaya. So certain rules, and then discussion goes on very well, and he goes backwards and forwards, but there are rules of discussion, but we don't have any rules of discussion, and those who discuss should be very highly learned and represent the Sampradaya. Within the Sampradaya, if there are discussions, there may be a split, as happened in shortly after the time of Vedanta Deshika and Lokpilai Acharya, was the, we're forgetting the name of the other one. No, it wasn't Lok, anyway. So that Sampradaya, the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, split into two over a philosophical question. So they didn't come to any conclusion, but the discussion may go on at a lower level, but that that follows the acharyas, and the acharya is not just a position that you happen to occupy, but it requires very high qualification of. So that's the first point. I mean, nowadays, you know, there was a petition made and all this, which I eventually signed also after most of my disciples have already signed it. What to do in the modern age? It's such a strange age. There's no culture even in Vaishnav society. It's a moot question, which means that it's no longer a relevant. The actual issue is it's not directly relevant because it's, at least for the time being, it's settled in which the BBT rejected the GBC's guideline to it and gave all their reasons. So the main on such a sensitive issue, it would be good to take guidance from one's spiritual master. Of course, you might think it was predictable which stance I would take. And what to do if, even after consulting your spiritual master, you're convinced that he's wrong and you are right, that your understanding of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra is better than him, which does happen. I mean, I know devotees who are... There is an ideological divide within our movement, if, just in case you hadn't noticed. It's not easy not to notice it. Wait a minute, there's two double negatives here. Hey. And it's obvious, let's say easily. And we find that disciples, they may stand on a different side of the fence to those gurus who take a side. Some of them are sitting on the fence, so to speak. They don't speak out on issues at all. And those that do, they may find that their disciple... In fact, one of the most prominent... I'm trying to find the right words to say this in. One of the most prominent advocates, or an advocate of annotations in Srila Prabhupada's books, or the whole kind of reasoning that goes into that, he's also boldly, you could say, and controversially proposed that there should be gay monogamy allowed within ISKCON. So his principal public philosophical antagonist is his disciple. It's a very strange position. Did you get all those words? His main public philosophical antagonist was a difficult word. You don't have that word in your language? Opponent is maybe a better word, yeah. Antagonism is... It gives a sense of personal enmity also. So that disciple who I happen to know very well, he at the same time maintains a respectful attitude, but the thing is in this case that the guru had been his attitude or his outlook changed. People approached him for initiation because he was presenting what we might call a very traditional hard line, if you want to call it
conservative.
Conservative. I'm trying to avoid the, you know, the hot words like fundamentalist. So he was a known proponent of a conservative attitude to Krishna consciousness. But then he changed and became what we might call liberal. And some of his disciples got left behind. We liked him as he was. And they're estranged from their guru. One of my disciples is having a lot of difficulty because when he was a brahmachari, he liked me. Now he's married. He has trouble. He changed. I didn't change. But so I recommended, well, you better find a Shiksha Guru, someone you can get on with. But so yeah, it puts it. Should you? It's an age old question of should we follow the authority or should we follow our conscience? In monastical orders, I believe in the Franciscan order, they say that you should, if it's a question of following the authority or your consciousness, you should follow your consciousness. Of course, they don't have any real guidelines. They're floating in the world of feelings. But when we say conscious, that means guru, sadhu, shastra. And everything should be based on guru, sadhu, and shastra. And it may be a very difficult thing to see that the person I've rested my hopes in for following Srila Prabhupada, we don't even want to express it, but we may feel ourselves constrained to do so, that we feel that, not just feel, but from all that I've understood in, I've imbibed in Krishna consciousness all these years, that he's not following Srila Prabhupada, which is it's an extremely heavy thing to say, and we don't really want to say that, but that's what it comes down to. So, should we follow our guru or should we follow our consciousness? Actually, it's not really a question because you can't. You can only artificially follow for some time. I mean, if you really feel so strongly that this is not what Prabhupada wanted, and you find, when you're reading Srila Prabhupada's books, you find this confirmed again and again and again, then you can try to follow something which you don't believe in, but you won't be able to. Of course, yeah, okay.
Maybe you'd like to just clarify with Murari if you're touching what he...
All right, good. Am I answering your question? Now, it may be also that those who are our esteemed God brothers and God sisters, this is polite language when you're just like in a company or something, if you disagree with someone and you say our esteemed colleague, when you say that, that means you're about to criticize him. But the point but it's being said there is that it's an important point, because we disagree with what they say, but we don't want to personally disrespect them. As I was just mentioning to Divya Prabandha Prabhu, this particular guru I was speaking about, who is like the chief theologian of what we might call the liberal camp, I personally have very high, I really disagree very strongly with almost everything he says nowadays. But personally, I have very high respect for him, and that may seem impossible. But it's not impossible, because he is a devotee of many years of tremendous service. I've liked him for so long, it's difficult to start disliking someone after such a long time. So, like I said, a couple of years ago, We had a long phone call, you know, it was like 2 hours until my card ran out. And, you know, we were just, you know, we were at each other like anything. But Prabhupada said this and all that. But it was actually very friendly. And I planned, I'm going to America soon, and I plan to phone him up again. And I hope we can, you know, have this. So it's a difference between, it's not a personal thing, although it can get personal because these are very heavy issues. If we think someone's misrepresenting Prabhupada to the world and to their disciples, it's a very, it does become very loaded, and it's quite likely, as you know, it's a heavy thing to say, and I'm definitely going to get in trouble for this one if it gets out, which it will. That it seems that our movement, it's not going to stay together. It's held together at the moment artificially, it seems, because there are such differences of opinion. It seems in course of time there has to be separation, official separation between the varying camps. Sorry to say it.
Like the Anglican Church.
Well, the Anglican Church itself is a split from the Catholic Church. And yeah, they're going through their, on these social issues. It's, you know, there are some who are trying to like hang in limbo, to use a theological term which has come into secular matters. There are some who are trying to just, you know, pretend it's not all there and hope things get better, but in the meantime the far left and the far right are not just floating apart but running apart. So it's quite likely in our movement there will also be that. And all right, enough said for now about all this. What should a disciple do? I don't think there's really a question of what he should do. I mean, if you can't follow something if your heart's not there.
Let us say that.
Okay,
he
please.
At least
he should discuss it.
Consider,
yeah,
the opinion of his guru.
Yeah.
With him.
Well, in the case, yeah, in the case that I'm referring to, the disciple I'm referring to has spent hours discussing with his guru, and who gave him the time to do so. And his guru is upset with him because he thinks he should, no, I'm following Prabhupada and he should follow me. But his disciple's convinced otherwise. And it's not just a sentimental thing, because his disciple has produced many papers refuting the position of his guru. It puts the disciple in a very difficult situation, actually, if the guru changes his stance. But then he has to follow his consciousness also. You cannot but do so. What is correct? Well, we'll fight over that. According to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra.
Can't you see that this is a detail as far as preaching is concerned? And just like
it may be
has different opinions of what Krishna is saying in the Gita, that Vishnu Chakravarti is his guru, yet he remains his loyal disciple.
Well, we have a theological explanation for that also. We can say Kalpa Veda. We can always say it was different in different eras. We can also say that. And what's understood? I also think like that may be some interim kind of adjustment, that we should have different centers for different devotees and we can live and let live. But I don't know how long we can live and let live, or to what extent we can live and let live. I mean, what are the limits of tolerance? For instance, we don't... Ritvikvadis consider themselves sincere followers of Srila Prabhupada, but we don't allow them in our temples. And there are limits. So how far does the tolerance go? And in many ways, even though Ritvikvadis appreciate Srila Prabhupada, or appear to appreciate Srila Prabhupada far more than certain Gaudiya Math followers do. I think we actually feel much more comfortable with Gaudiya Math people than we do with Ritvidvadis, but we don't allow them either, oftentimes, because of various reasons. So it may be that we were all together at one time and we may separate, and then later on, you know, a few hundred years later, they have interfaith conferences, and then they don't hate each other so much. In the Sri Sampradaya, and that Tengalai, Vadagalai, that, you know, they were really, they're Brahmins, so they weren't killing each other, but I mean, verbally they were really, really, really very heavily against each other. They're not heavily against each other, and in one way I wish they were, because the reason they're not against each other so much is because no one studies philosophy anymore, and they're not that much committed to their... The reason that we're so strongly against each other is because of our commitment, actually. If we weren't that much committed to spreading Krishna consciousness and being Krishna conscious, we wouldn't care that much. Just like we don't care that much what the, you know, about theological debates within the Jewish religion. We don't, you know, we don't care that much. It doesn't, because it's their thing. It's not our thing. We're not committed to it. Anything else about this? Yeah, it's a big topic. It's a very tough one. It's a tough one. We're trying to avoid controversy here, but we can't, because it's all around us. As I was saying when I first came here, well, let us live in this Lika camp, let us live as far as possible in the eye of the storm. The controversies are raging all around us. Let us sit peacefully and discuss Krishna consciousness. And then we'll go back into the storm. But even in the eye of the storm, sometimes the storm enters. Yeah.
This is connecting to the previous questions. Why is it slow? And now I'm not a philosopher, so I can see it only from a street point of view. Yeah? And it's noticeable that everybody who's standing in the street and preaching, anybody who takes care of any conditioned soul who walks in the door and exhibits some faith knows that bhaktas we don't make, they are Zen. They are Zen. There's a test for us how far we are capable to take care of them. Not just physically, but just, you know, in the terms of philosophy. Now, I noticed when I travel around, even the purely holy bhaktas, they have a level of understanding which cannot be compared with the ones we had when we joined. Many of them are not bhaktas, but it's really stunning. What kind of questions did you ask only after 2 weeks being around? I didn't ask these questions. I was just, you know, out on the street and no question asked. They want to know. And their determination, it seems like Krishna is putting us a test, that their determination and conviction needs much more basic inspiration, much more deeper inspiration. And they demand that. Now they have these kind of issues, even a new bhakta is confronted. They read Prabhupada's books and then what? But to speak of the preachers who go out inviting people to come and join what? I mean, I want to go out and preach for a movement bringing a new condition soul from the street when the bhakta is homosexual, sorry. I wouldn't know how to explain this. And I knew, preaching in the city of Berlin, many polite and kind homosexuals. We had completely okay relationship. They knew where the line goes. They were humbly contributing and chanting. But they knew they were not living in a brahmacharya ashram. So this is like when the lines are, and when these borders are not established, then the preachers also are forcefully establishing their own borders and their own lines. You know, and that's where polarization comes about. Must because it's so hard to squeeze one bhakta out of that karmic society and introducing him to what? We calculated once in Sweden how much it cost to make one bhakta, to bring one bhakta. Approximately. Hey, it could cast him out of gold almost, you know.
You mean all the expenses compared to the number of people coming?
Yeah. So even more so you are concerned, what are we giving to them? What are we going to give to them? My personal little thing is that these discussions, considering the form condition of the souls on the street, are so irrelevant. People go to hell minute by minute. Most of them will probably become ghosts in this lifetime. We are discussing,
talking about annotations.
Yeah, we are talking annotation, annotated there. It's not being in a war, you know, the bullets are flying here and there. You go, how would you put it in a poetry? I mean, you know, I feel like it's... how would you word this description of this battle field? Yes, and then you get the ballot in it. This is what you face in the street.
I think Maharaj also has his previous experience that in Russia and other, third world countries, very few of the devotees are on the internet, and we just don't have these problems there. You know, I never met one Russian devotee ask me about annotations, and I'm there like half of the year. Not even one person asked me about this, and they never talk about this, and they don't even know anything about it. So, you know, I think you could conclude from that if you're spending too much time on the internet, it just spins your wheels unnecessarily, and you waste a lot of time and energy. You know, the devotees there chanting, dancing, preaching, selling books, you know, so forth, and they don't have all these problems.
One thing, another thing on this issue, I'm very straightforward with even newcomers, because even people who are not devotees and not really intending to be devotees, I mean, this is in India more, they'll point out things in our moon that's not in your books, that's not your teaching. And they people will come and say, should I follow you or what's in your books? So I'm straight, I just tell it openly to everyone, new devotees and everyone, because as Mandal Prabhu says, they're not stupid. They can see what's that within our movement, various contaminations have entered, and you have to choose how you want to follow. These are Prabhupada's books. This is what Prabhupada said. We're trying to follow that. Others have different ideas, and they can say they're right, but we don't accept that. That's all. And actually, the places where they are not trying to promote all these funny ideas, and where they're not bringing in revisionism, they're the place where they're making where in America, the only places where they're making devotees and distributing lots of books and the movement's going on is where they just have faith in the regular process of Krishna consciousness as it always was. But it seems there are some members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness who don't really want the movement to be like that at all. So anyway, I'm a dinosaur, as I was christened a dinosaur many years ago, and I still didn't become extinct. So I didn't evolve.
Evolve.
remained in the Stone Age. So, but personally, I prefer. Maybe you can say it's just my feeling, as we're on the platform of feelings these days. It just feels better to me to get up early in the morning, go to Mangalarti and chant my japa, and go to class and do all the things that we always did and Prabhupada told us that he wanted us to do, and get on with the Hare Krishna movement, and like that. And we don't need so many different new ideas. I'm not against intellectualism at all. I also think it's very much needed. But actually, this idea of footnotes for Prabhupada's books inspired me. Yes, I agree. We need annotations. We need commentaries. I'm all for it. Actually, Prabhupada's commentary is so important for the world that all the important commentaries have sub-commentaries and on them. Yes, we should have, just like Burijan Prabhu brought out his commentaries on the first four cantos of the Bhagavatam. This is a great contribution. It's the disciple's worship. It's his intellectual worship of Srila Prabhupada's commentaries. So there should be commentaries on Srila Prabhupada's books, just like every time we speak on Bhagavatam, it's a commentary. But that should follow and illuminate and praise and bring demonstrate all the wonderful points that Prabhupada is making, and see, he said this here and that correlates with this, and maybe if Tadbhag Visargo Janataga, what is that? Namantyanas Abhadavatyapi, if there's some grammatical or usage which is irregular, that could also be pointed out for the benefit of. Sometimes actually the sentence construction is such, the sentence could be understood in various ways. So that could be pointed out. And the topic of the particular controversial point that, what was that? That women like a man who is expert in rape. Yes, it should be discussed, but not in Prabhupada's books. Let us worship Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada was the greatest intellectual. And those who are, there are intellectuals in the world, and they will apply their intelligence to try to understand Prabhupada's books. So that is the job of the acharyas in each generation, to guide the present generation to understand how to understand, how to apply their intelligence to understand the acharya's contribution. So Srila Prabhupada's tremendous which he himself said is his greatest contribution, is his books. So yes, there should be commentaries, elaborate commentaries, many commentaries, following the spirit of Srila Prabhupada, but not in his books directly. They wouldn't even fit. It inspired me. I don't know if I can do it in this lifetime, but I'd love to, with the help of others, I don't think I could do it alone, to write commentaries on every single, every word in Prabhupada's books is worshipable. So every word, at least something on each purport. There are so many things you can say here in this purport, in this section Prabhupada is following Vishwanath, and in this section he's following Madhva, and you can say this is the literal translation of the verse, and you can show how Prabhupada has added his commentary here like this. Yeah, I mean there's endless. I mean Prabhupada, the world is full of useless nonsense, rascal intellectualism. And by pointing that out, and by giving us the intellectualism which is focused on the actual object of knowledge, Sri Krishna, Srila Prabhupada has given an opportunity for a whole new school of intellectualism which should replace all that bogus stuff. So yes, there should be, let all the intellectuals come and apply their intelligence in understanding and explaining Srila Prabhupada's books in various ways, following the acharyas. So annotations, kijai. Why annotations? We just have full-fledged commentaries. That quote that women like a man who is expert at rape, it is, you know. What does it mean? It's if you take it at face value, it's difficult to understand because it doesn't fit with observed reality, at least. It doesn't seem that women like men who are expert in rape. Then you have to see the whole context in which that statement comes, and also people who are serious enough to read the books up to that far, they're not going to get thrown out by one statement. They're not going to get thrown out by one statement. But it should be explained. I agree. Not only that, so many statements. I mean, Prabhupada, everything he said was controversial. And just that purport we were reading in Rijeka, what was that about the... what was that? What a useless brain I have. It was only 2 days ago. But just implicit in the purport, it was just implicit that there's faith in demigods, and it's just stated as a just like... Hey, you know, the other day I was speaking to Indra and Chandra, you know, it's just like that, you know, it's just like, you know, demigods, you know, demigods and demigods. Prabhupada in that particular purport doesn't attempt to explain there are demigods, but he just talks about, just like matter of fact, you know, and many millions of years ago, Prabhupada writes, and the reader immediately has to accept that many millions of years ago there was civilization and everything else. I mean, everything in Prabhupada's books, he just writes in a very matter-of-fact way things which is just a total punch in the face for everything that anyone ever learned throughout their whole life. So, yeah, we need, and Prabhupada wondered, the scholars should show how evolutionary theory is wrong, and there's so much work to do. There's huge intellectual work to do. I'm all the time thinking of new projects, which anyone's got a lifetime or two to spare could. We need teams of scholars. We need a religious history of India, because the whole history is what's got. It's such an obstacle in the world's acceptance of Vedic knowledge, is that the history of India has been so badly misrepresented. So that's required. And then recent history, the government of India just totally, in their educational system, totally cover the fact that there was so much in the time of the Muslim rule, there was so much damage done to Vedic culture, and how the British did even worse damage. The Muslims in a gross way, and the British in a deliberately subtle intellectual hooliganism way. So all these points should be brought out, and there's so much work to do. Tremendous amount of work to be done. And then, you know, then there's the people on the street. They're coming in, and their immediate thing is, you know, how can I give up smoking? I want to chant Hare Krishna. So it's like, you know, that we have to deal on all levels. And Prabhupada did that. He wrote his books, he met with big scholars, and he dealt with his... One devotee told me, he was sorry about this, I'm hogging the show here. All right, I'll finish with this last anecdote. That one devotee... He told me he was assigned as Prabhupada's guard at the farm in Hyderabad. So he was throughout the night. Prabhupada was in that little room translating his books, and Godrum Prabhu, wonderful, very sweet devotee, he was chanting his rounds, and Prabhupada, he came out, he was chanting his rounds so sloppily, it seems, that Prabhupada came out, and he said, you know, don't chant like that. And Prabhupada sat and chanted around with him. You know, Prabhupada's making his contribution for the re-spiritualization of the whole human society. His most important work, his main service to his spiritual master, but his disciple is outside chanting Hare Krishna in such a way that Prabhupada felt, I have to personally come out and teach him and chant. Prabhupada chanted, said, chant like this, and he chanted around with him.
Kodram told you about.
Kodram told me that, yeah. What a mercy. You remember seeing that Mangalananda on the Prabhupada Memories?
Yeah,
the Prabhupada, he was talking with Prabhupada, and the Prabhupada's there with all the big shot sannyasis, and Mangalananda comes in and promises his modern music, which is tasteful, not rock and roll. If you're going to sing Western music, follow Mangalananda's example. So he asked Prabhupada, is it okay? And Prabhupada said, sometimes the cows, what is it? You've got cows giving milk, you have to tolerate the kicks, Prabhupada said. It's kind of, yeah, it's okay. If you want, you can do it. So then he was going out. And then Prabhupada called me back, you can see in the video. And then Mangalananda just starts crying and crying and crying. The Prabhupada, the Acharya of the whole world, he cared enough about me, insignificant me, to call me back and give me some extra instruction, even though he's so busy. And he was going on crying and crying and crying. He just couldn't, you know, he's got this huge body. He's just crying, just thinking of Prabhupada's mercy on him. And then they said, and then...
Prabhupada listened to the...
Yeah, he actually listened to it. And then Siddhanta, who's doing the... Then he's... Mangalananda's... Siddhanta says to him, don't worry, you're not the only one who cried. You know, he's... so many other... And then he goes on crying and crying. Siddhanta says, don't worry, we'll edit it out. But he didn't edit it out. Then I met Mangalananda last year and I mentioned it to him and he started crying again. There's this huge guy, looks like, you know, looks like he should be on one of these motorbikes or something like this. But his heart is so soft. That mercy he got from Prabhupada. Okay. Alright, any more questions? What's the time? It's late, shall we finish? Sorry, I hogged the whole show there. Excuse me. You know, I'm one of those people, you stick them in front of a mic and they'd...
Where you go?
Sorry.
How do you like that topic? That's my... It's controversial.
Yeah. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.